Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. There's a new member of the legal team representing Catherine Russell, the widow of one of the suspected Boston Marathon bombers. Russell has added Joshua Dratel, an attorney with special expertise in terrorism cases. She continues to be represented by the Providence firm DeLuca & Weizenbaum, though the firm specializes in medical malpractice. The announcement of a new attorney comes as the search for a final resting place for her husband's body drags on, and federal investigators continue to question her claim that she knew nothing of his plans to carry out the attack. Russell's attorneys say she will continue to help investigators as much as possible. Hearings begin today in Washington to determine whether the Boston Marathon bombings might have been prevented. Kurt Nickisch reports that several Boston law enforcement officials are expected to testify.
The House Homeland Security Committee is holding a series of hearings. The chair, Republican Congressman Michael McCaul from Texas, says he ultimately wants to find out whether warning signs were missed and how to prevent future attacks. Massachusetts Public Safety Executive Kirk Schwartz will testify. So will Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis. He's planning to tell the congressional panel that his department was well prepared for the Boston Marathon, but couldn't prevent the attack. Davis also plans to call for improvements in the ways that different law enforcement agencies communicate over police radios.
That's Kurt Nickisch reporting from Boston. Students at the University of Rhode Island are protesting a decision to move graduation ceremonies indoors. As Rhode Island Public Radio's Don Borman reports, the university made the change for safety reasons.
URI says the recent gun scare on campus and the bombings in Boston prompted it to move the graduation ceremony into the Ryan Center. Graduating student Kelly Harris is unhappy with the move. She says students are limited to bringing two guests, and that will make it harder for her friends and family to see her walk across the stage.
This is affecting the vast majority of the graduating seniors.
URI will help set up TV screens across campus for people to watch the graduation ceremony. The university says it's unsure whether it will hold the ceremony indoors next year. For Rhode Island Public Radio, I'm Don Borman.
The attorneys for a woman charged in an alleged $10 million kickback scheme involving U.S. Navy contracts say members of Congress could be called to testify. The federal trial is due to start in June. Several defendants are charged in the alleged scheme. Lawyers for Mary O'Rourke say her work consisted of introducing a Navy contractor to unnamed members of Congress from Rhode Island and their staffers who could back up her claim. Offices of the congressional delegation say they have not been contacted about the case. Senator Jack Reed's office says the case does not involve members of Congress. Prosecutors claim O'Rourke was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for doing little or no work for the contractor. And the state is changing its rules about fishing for and keeping a species called scup in order to promote saltwater fishing in urban areas. Scup, or pogies as they're also known, are an easy-to-catch fish and are abundant in Narragansett Bay. People fishing from shore in three locations will be allowed to keep smaller-sized scup in an experimental program started by the State Department of Environmental Management. The fishing locations are at India Point Park in Providence, Conimicut Point in Warwick, and Stonebridge in Tiverton.
DeLuca & Weizenbaum has its offices in a three-story brick building at the foot of Providence's leafy College Hill. The principals are Amato Buddy DeLuca, a graduate of Suffolk University Law School and veteran personal injury attorney, and Miriam Weizenbaum, a graduate of Temple University Law School, who worked as a public defender in Philadelphia for many years. Andrew Horowitz, Associate Dean of the Roger Williams University Law School, says DeLuca and Weizenbaum are known for being exceptionally well-prepared.
They do everything together. They are a team. They don't have one person has one case and somebody else has another case. When you hire this law firm, you get those two lawyers, every piece of them on the case.
Feared in the medical community and revered in legal circles, the firm lists a string of successes on its website. A $15 million judgment against Blue Cross and Blue Shield, $10 million for a brain injury, nearly $9 million for the loss of a limb, and the list goes on and on. Why did Warren Russell, an emergency room physician, and his wife Judith, a nurse, call on attorneys who win missing limb cases to represent their daughter as she talks to the FBI? DeLuca tells Rhode Island Public Radio a friend called and asked him to help the young woman. The firm, he says, has taken the case on a pro bono basis. DeLuca says not charging Russell just seemed like the right thing to do. But is DeLuca and Weizenbaum up to representing Boston Marathon bombing suspect widow Catherine Russell? David Zlotnick, a criminal law professor at Roger Williams University Law School and a former federal prosecutor, has his doubts.
In Rhode Island, they have a reputation of being a classy shop, well prepared, with a great, tremendous expertise in medical malpractice and personal injury litigation. How that transfers over to representing someone in the unique situation of being a widow of a terrorist, I have a hard time seeing that jump. But nevertheless, you have to kind of think about why did the family make this choice.
Zlotnick believes DeLuca and Weizenbaum should bring in an outside expert to help them, someone experienced in complex Justice Department cases. But his colleague at Roger Williams Law School, Associate Dean Andrew Horwitz, says it's too soon for that.
It would be premature to make that kind of a judgment now, before she's been charged, or at least before the government makes it abundantly clear that she's a suspect or a target. If we crossed that line, then I think I would agree with that notion that somebody with some connection to the Department of Justice would probably be very helpful.
DeLuca and Weizenbaum, interviewed Monday, would not clarify conflicting reports over whether Russell is still cooperating with federal investigators. But if she is, agents are undoubtedly asking tough questions, like how bombs could be built in her Cambridge apartment without her knowledge, why Al-Qaeda literature was found on her laptop, and how, if at all, her husband justified the purchase of fireworks and at least three pressure cookers. Zlotnick suspects investigators are not entirely buying what she's saying.
Her claim is that she was busy supporting the family and was not home during the day, and that he hid these things from her. And that's certainly possible, but the government, I don't think, believes her right now, particularly because their concern is that she became radicalized as well over the last few years, which suggests that she perhaps shared some of his thoughts or values about the United States and about its role in the world.
Since taking on the case 2 weeks ago, TV trucks have been lined up outside DeLuca and Weizenbaum's office, and they've been besieged with interview requests. They turn most down, limiting their client's exposure to a few press releases proclaiming she knew nothing of her husband's activities and was horrified by the marathon attacks. Attorney Tom Briety, who represented Dan Beakley, the band manager who started the Station nightclub fire, says it's the same media strategy he adopted.
It can be quite overwhelming, not only for the client, but also for the office of the attorneys that are trying to represent that client. You get flooded with telephone calls. You tend to come into contact with a large number of journalists, all looking for the same thing, or a variation on the same theme, all within a very short period of time. The pressure can be fairly intense. There's a point where maybe it makes more sense to simply kind of shut things down.
Zlotnick says a media blackout also protects the client.
I mean, I think if I'm the lawyer right now, I don't just grant interviews to the media. First of all, you'll be overwhelmed by them. But secondly, you still don't know what the government knows, what they think they know. And this is a very aggressive investigation. This was a national tragedy and a horrific crime. And the government is going to aggressively prosecute anyone who either helped before or even helped after, even if it was simply to help a friend or a family member flee or escape capture. That's a crime. If you know they did it and you helped them evade capture, you're now guilty.
Assuming she's cleared of any wrongdoing, and that's an assumption at this point, what hope does North Kingstown native Catherine Russell have of resuming anything like a normal life? Horwitz, the associate dean at Roger Williams University Law School, says she may have to enter the federal witness protection program to reclaim her life. That may be overstating the case, but it's clear that Catherine Russell's days of anonymity are behind her. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Watching the game's splendid, perfectly sharp, gloriously acted production of Beauty Queen was, for me at least, a trip down two very different roads. On one hand, I kept thinking of the legions of travel advertisements we've all seen. Ah, the green of Ireland, the rolling hills, the charming little towns, the friendly pubs. Where have you gone, Rick Steves? But that sunny, green view is hardly the take of Irish playwright Martin McDonagh. His Ireland is a tortured underground where old hatreds run deep and old needs are so close to the surface. It's a place where a mother-daughter clash can end in a bloody-filled tragedy of Greek proportion. At the GAM, Judith Swift has directed a spine-tingling production, one that gets all the horror and humor of playwright McDonough's world. Yes, this play of tragedy is also laugh-out-loud funny. Beauty Queen takes place in the rural far west of Ireland, the small town of Connemara in County Galway, to be specific. In a superb performance, the GAM's leading lady, Janine Kane, is Maureen, a 40-year-old virgin whose life is filled with frustration and trouble. Her sisters are married and away. Maureen must stay home with their 70-year-old mother, a woman of monumental fierceness, meanness, and great needs. When a slump-shouldered Maureen first shuffles on stage, her feet padding the floor, dressed all in dun colors, she immediately lets you know this is a woman almost defeated by life. Later, when she gets one last chance to improve her world, when she's dressed in a sexy little black dress and has a man in view, you root hard for her, and it's heartbreaking to know it's not going to work out. Kane is wondrous, and it is another wonder when she is matched in brilliance by Wendy Overly as the Mad Mama. Overly's performance can almost be wrapped up in one moment when she encompasses all the mean-spirited plotting, the sheer malevolence of her life, by merely sitting down in a chair. The creaky suffering of that moment tells you much about why Mother is a madwoman, and when she never hesitates to take full advantage of preventing the one last chance her daughter has for a better life, her eyes squint and gleam with pure, poisonous drive, and you know you are seeing a second great performance. The men, oh yes, there are males, and they are very fine too. Steve Kidd is a home village boy who's gone away and done okay. He covets Maureen, but can't quite make the full effort that might take her away to that land of opportunity, America. Kidd shows you all of the underneath fear and lack of self-confidence that does in people who have been put down and beaten on a large scale. Joe Short plays a comic relief character very well, too. So, all in all, The Beauty Queen of Lennon is not a play for the faint of heart or young children, but it is a triumph for anyone who loves the strength of powerful, honest theater.